Yes, well, I'm quite shocked about the whole sort of scenario, personally. Shocked and outraged in many ways, as Gabriella might be, about the Spanish Navy actually sparking outrage. Outrage with a childish, quote-unquote, musical incursion into Gibraltarian waters. I mean, even before we come to the weather forecast, I mean, this notion of the Spanish Navy actually sailing, appearing to sail through Gibraltar waters, playing their national anthem. It's just not good enough, is it, Gabriella?
You know what the funny thing about it is, that no one actually heard it. So the government said that it's...
They were playing it silently. That's even worse.
And things. But I don't know if anyone's actually... I don't know. I'm not going to comment on it because it's something very political and...
exactly. I mean, yeah, you know, what would the Frodo position be on this? It could open up a whole range of things on this side of things.
We have not found someone who can 100% say...
Well, interesting enough,
we're relying on purely a video.
Yes, exactly. Well, we've got that video now. Actually, I'm pressing play. It was recorded apparently by a Spanish angler, and on such things can global conflicts actually start. Of course, it's actually not playing at present, so there we are. Already the social media folk have actually started off with enough is enough. It may not undermine sovereignty for the UK, but for us, as Gibraltarians, it's an invasion of the Rock of Gibraltar. The UK government must take action in defence of its people. A spokesperson apparently for the government of Gibraltar said today's Spanish naval incursion into British Gibraltar territorial waters represents an unprofessional provocation, which is as childish as it is meaningless. But as Gabriella, shedding some important light on the whole system there, said it may be in the department of possibly fake news.
I just don't want to comment
Look,
it's just something that's so
of course
political back at home, get anything wrong,
facts of the matter, Gabriella. Yeah. Facts of the matter.
The government have come out and said that it was childish.
Yes.
So, and
as somebody who's been with us for over two centuries, having been born in 1801, you should know. You should have that sort of.
Do you know a really interesting fact about the Gibraltar Chronicle?
I'd love to know one.
It's a really complicated fact. We are the second oldest English language newspaper in continuous print.
I mean, that deserves a round of applause.
So, and I know we've kind of like really gone for a...
It's not quite first, though.
Gibraltar first.
I know, not the first. And also, you have to remember continuous print. There are much older newspapers. Mm-hmm. And there are older newspapers who, they are older and are currently still around today, but were not continuously in print. It's a very, very specific... title that we hold.
It's vital. You know,
Gibraltar's first, though, isn't it?
As we like to say, Gibraltar Probably. Chronicle rocks.
Well, I think we are Gibraltar's. We are Gibraltar's oldest newspaper.
Nobody.
We have that as well.
Gibraltar Chronicle rocks. I worked all night on that one. You know, it was up all night coming out. Gibraltar
sure
Chronicle
you were.
Rocks. I was going to say
sure
it rocks, but I thought no, just Gibraltar Chronicle rocks. GCR. Emma.
Yes.
What haven't we heard as yet that we actually need to hear, otherwise the whole world conceivably could collapse?
The weather?
From?
Gibraltar.
For Lincoln. Yes. That's your cue, Gabriella.
Okay, so today's weather for Lincoln is highs of 13 degrees centigrade, lows of 12 degrees centigrade, and it will be a day of light cloud and a moderate breeze.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo... It's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Indeed. So looking at the Gibraltar Chronicle, I see we've carried the line with UK can unilaterally revoke Article 50, according to legal opinion. And lots of local news there. Training exercise bus has actually caught fire. Oh, dear.
That was quite interesting. They had used it the day before for a training exercise, and then the next day someone went in to weld something and it caught fire. So it was a bit quite ironic that the training exercise bus ended up using for an exercise to, extinguisher bus.
Well, thankfully, no one was hurt.
Very well done.
It was quite an ironic one. It was quite fun, that one.
Yeah, Ben is shaking his head to the point of view, what kind of world are we actually in with respect to that? But so it goes. Ben, anything you'd like to quiz Gabrielle about?
Yes, what is the state of this dog that is Frodo?
This Frodo dog thing.
Oh, he's had his food, had his treat, and then walked off.
I should do. Is he in the festive spirit yet? Has he had his costume worn yet?
No, I brought his costumes out, but he hasn't worn them yet. Actually, that reminds me, I can put his Christmas pudding one on some point this week.
That's
a Christmas pug.
There you go. Festive pug.
For the I mean, we are actually approaching the second week of Advent, so I think as we open the next door of the calendar, clearly it's a case
Christmas
of...
Christmas pugging, that's exactly. What it is. It's not Christmas pudding.
Christmas pugging. Yeah, all sorts of treats and marvellous things in that side of things. And Emma, anything you'd like to add about Gibraltar? I mean, have you considered over the last few weeks that you've been part of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition and obviously laying your claim down saying... You're going to recommend to the Street family that you have a trek over to Gibraltar.
Yeah, I do. Talking about it often enough now, I think I should go and visit someday. But I don't really know what I'd do over there.
You'd speak to Gabriella. I'm sure that's one thing. You sort of connect on that. I mean, she'd probably welcome you with open arms. So Frodo would have nothing else.
See the monkeys.
Exactly. They're not monkeys. They're apes, aren't they?
Are they apes?
Well, now we changed back to monkeys.
Oh.
Yeah, apparently we were calling them apes for a really long time, and
apparently
everyone else were calling them monkeys. And then now we're calling them monkeys again because turns out they're tailless monkeys.
Ah.
Because they've lost their tail through evolution because we're not in a tropical land, so obviously it gets cold in winter, so they don't need tails.
Exactly.
Because tails would lose a lot of heat. So
technically,
apparently that's why the Barbary macaque has lost its tail. But apparently it's a monkey, not an ape, which before we were calling them apes for years and years. So now I'm even confused of what to call them. Monkeys, apes, just call them whatever you want.
Personally, I call them Fred.
Or tailless monkeys.
Tailless monkeys.
If you want to be really specific.
Tailless monkeys. Tailless minkies, perhaps.
Don't feed them, though.
Never.
They're angry, aren't they?
Not after midnight.
Yeah, they
and if they get wet as well.
Because people don't realise, they don't know the concept of none left. Like, tourists will feed them and be like... Oh, you know, just put their hands out and be like, oh, there's none left. And they've got a backpack still in their and they've been bringing out the food from their backpack. The monkey don't realise that when you put your hand up and say none left.
Monkey don't
realise. They think that there's... They think there's still food left in your backpack.
That's because they've been lied to so often over the centuries that they've actually got lost faith in all politicians, especially people who visit Gibraltar.
Exactly. They're losing their teeth from all the sweets that tourists give them.
Opening
they're not, monkeys aren't meant to have sugar.
Neither are human beings, really. So clearly...
Possible, but we brush our teeth.
Possible dental healthcare opportunity for Gibraltarian people there, if you like.
Tourists and locals ruining monkeys' teeth through sweets.
That's a story to become.
It'll happen. We'll talk about it next week. Meanwhile, would you like to put those last two questions to Gabriella, please, Ben?
Yes, Gabriella, have you enjoyed your 10 o'clock link bus today?
I have, thank you.
Good, and will you be joining us again next week?
Yes, I will.
Look forward to it then.
They said there'll be snow at Christmas. They said there'll be peace on earth. But instead it just kept on raining. A veil of tears for the virgin birth. I remember one Christmas morning, a winter's light and a distant choir, and the peal of a bell and that Christmas tree smell, and eyes full of tinsel and fire. They sold me a dream of Christmas. They sold me a silent night. They told me a fairy story till I believed in the Israelite. And I believed in Father Christmas, and I looked to the sky with excited eyes. Then I woke with a yawn in the first light of dawn, and I saw him and threw his disguise.
Of Bucks Fizz and I Believe in Father Christmas, which will be a whole new world later on. Sadly, William Shatner hasn't done a version of Greg Lake's I Believe in Father Christmas, but I'm sure he will.
Rotten bit of luck.
What was that, Ben?
What a rotten bit of luck.
It was. It was, actually. Still, never mind. Good luck is always accompanying Richard Fitzwilliams when he goes through the door of various stores in London and, indeed, starts linking up with Talk.
You need to have your own page,
Richard,
Radio. Honestly.
He has got his own page.
No. You need to have a special department store Christmas theme page.
Yes. I've had a lot of fun. You're absolutely right on Talk Radio Europe. I was on the Selena McKenzie show. In fact, it's been great fun preparing for it. Going to the various top hotels, going down various streets and so forth, from Bond Street to Covent Garden to the Angels, the dawning lower and upper Regent Street. And, I mean, contrasting what we saw with the rocking Father Christmas, absolutely hilarious, in Selfridge's window, with the mundane, faceless mannequins of Harrods, and contrast that with the glorious decadence of, well, I imagine Lincoln's like this all the time, in the Harvey Nicks windows, young people disporting themselves in, you know, out of champagne bottles and all sorts of fun and games on swings.
You could have described the actual Lincoln High Street pretty much in the height of summer at that particular moment.
Well, that's exactly what I thought. But it has been absolutely fascinating, especially to find that, you know, the way the teams of designers start months in advance with all these Christmas shows.
How else can they attract people into actually getting to debt? I mean, let's face it.
Well, there is, of course, that side of it, but just my point being that it was quite fun that by accident, I presume, the Savoy and the Dorchester both decided on carousels for themes, which, incidentally, the Savoy have a portrait of the Queen, too terrible to be mentioned on this programme by Henry Kelly. I mean, it really makes H.M. Look as though she was some form of waxwork which had been discarded from Madame Tussauds. It really is too dire.
OK, well, I mean, I could actually talk about the alleged infighting between the various Duchess of Sussex.
We could, but whilst I say... I mean,
go, kill her, Kate! Sorry, that's them.
They're very, very different people. The relocation is largely to do with privacy. There's no question that they both got different destinies. I do think that probably sums it up. I do think there have been hiccups, as there would be in any family when you've got a huge
wedding. In the family at Christmas? Surely not.
I didn't say at Christmas. That was a wonderful twist, Alex. You really, really excelled
yourself. Bit of fake news there.
The way Alex just slipped step in was just...
He's trying to provoke you, Richard. He's trying to provoke you. He's...
Well, of course he is, but he knows that we were so pushed for time last week that we didn't say goodbye to Nicholas Rogue and to Bernardo Bertolucci.
And we're still pushed for time this week, but we have said goodbye now, and we will...
We have indeed, yeah. But Don't Look Now is probably the finest psychological thriller ever made, so I must make a point
but
there.
But not if you like people of restricted height wearing red costumes.
We have to be very careful of spoilers on any show. I'm sure you would agree.
Yeah, exactly, that's what I said, you know, just... Be aware of that, you know.
Indeed,
small people wearing red costumes.
Venice has never been the same, and I don't think I have ever since that scene.
Exactly.
The scene to which you refer. And Bertolucci's The Conformist, The Spider's Stratagem. A great pity that his reputation was undoubtedly tarnished by the abuse occurred in the way which Maria Schneider suffered in Last Tango in Paris, which I thought was an immensely powerful film, but we know a great deal about how it was made now.
Well, exactly. Hashtag pass the butter. No, let's not go any further down that line because it's
goodness me, I'm wondering what more is in store.
No. It all started off when the Spanish Navy decided to invade Gibraltar. That was when the whole thing started.
Yes. With the national anthem. Yeah. Yes. What next? Yeah. No, goodness me. What ought I do?
It's people being disobedient. That's the problem, Richard. People being disobedient.
Yes, and also a film set locally here, in fact, quite almost literally a stone's throw from where I live. In a Jewish community, and the facts are that this is a movie directed by Sebastian Lelo, which I thought was extremely touching. It was dramatic, but it was not always convincing. But it's got a superb cast. Rachel Weisz plays Ronit Krishna, whose father, local bigwigs in the synagogue, suddenly dies. So his estranged daughter, there has been a scandal. She has moved to New York. She returns to the home of David Cooperman, played by Alessandro Nivola, who is her father's disciple and expected to follow him. The facts are that Esty, played by Rachel McAdams, both superb actresses, by the way, both absolutely gorgeous, I have to mention, is married to David, which somewhat surprises Ronit. She visits her uncle Moshe, played by Alan Cordoner, particularly a bullpine performance, and finds out all her father's possessions have been given to the synagogue. She, quite literally, is escorted home to get just a few possessions, but accompanied by Esty, and Esty wanted to see her again, notified of her father's death, and she's not happy with her married life. She is clearly attracted to Ronit, and it's the relationship between them and the fact that this leaks out that causes, links with the theme and the story here. It's a very closed community. There is no question, however, that the script has been somewhat doctored in Hollywood style as it progresses towards its climax, which I do have to say had aspects of this are touching, and I thought the chemistry between Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams worked well. I did feel that the script was doctored in a Hollywood studio, and you could follow the way this was being handled. I really didn't find all of it convincing, but it visually impressive, and it has an intelligent script, and above all, the relationship between the two women is very touchingly sketched, and it's one of those thought-provoking movies that, although, as I say, it had certainly, as far as I was concerned, it was not always convincing. What is always eye-catching, especially when you've got two such consummate performers on the screen, and to sketch the relationship between them. That was why originally Ronit had left for New York. It's very, very touching, and it's a film I'd recommend if the theme appeals.
Okay, clearly it's not Aquaman or Mary Poppins, but that's to come. Emma, would you actually be checking out Disobedience?
Yeah, it looks good.
Mm-hmm. A beautifully tense tale of forbidden love. Ben?
Yeah, I think it's and it's certainly an interesting film. Would you say it's easy to follow, Richard?
It is easy, or reasonably easy to follow, and indeed, I would make the point, however, that the film could have had more dramatic tension. But having said that, the fact that you've got two such excellent performances, and the fact I like the chemistry between them, and also there is, you've got any institution, and the community is a form almost of an institution that is as repressive as this. The local Jewish community, this a part of it, putting it mildly, their love is forbidden and discouraged, which is why aspects of this plot, I'm being very careful with spoilers, Alex, I hope you note this, are not probably what would actually happen in reality, and that does detract a bit from it. But yes, I mean, I would recommend it.
Rachel Weisz, Rachel McAdams, and that's in one movie. And in another movie, we're talking about Kerry Mulligan. I believe it's Wildlife.
Yes, and Kerry Mulligan, I mean, she's an actress I've greatly admired. I think we've all followed her since An Education. And I remember seeing...
Well, actually, it was Blink in Doctor Who, actually, where she really started, but that's a different line entirely.
Well, a very, very different line, certainly to what I'm coming to, which is Skyfall, which I saw... the David Hare play with her and Bill Nye. And I have never seen this in a theatre before. Perhaps, Alex, you have, but it must be very, very rare. Hare paints two characters, one the symbol of Bollock of capitalism, the other independence, suffering,
and nothing,
if you like.
Nothing to do with the James Bond movie, the same name, Skyfall, just in case.
Emphatically,
you might go in expecting to see Daniel Craig, and you think, what the flip?
Not in a theatre, you wouldn't, and certainly my point was, what was so interesting, was that she played the role so passionately of someone who's, I mean, a free spirit, and someone also who's a very liberal free spirit. The audience applauded in a theatre in the middle of a dramatic scene. I put it to you, have you seen that in a theatre?
Frightfully American, Richard, actually. It's usually accompanied by people actually wandering in on a pantomime stage getting huge applause.
You are flippant. It was extraordinary. Have you actually seen that in the middle of a dramatic scene in a serious
no,
play?
No, I have to say, in a serious play, no.
No, well, I've had
lots of rustling of popcorn packets and various other
bits
and
pieces. Oh, that's too
mobile
terrifying.
Mobile phones going off, yeah. Exactly.
But too terrifying, but back to Wildlife. I mean, she certainly doesn't disappoint here. It's a wonderful performance. I know this is directed by a first-class actor who's appeared in several films. There Will Be Blood, for example, is something that is indelibly etched on my conscience, this Paul Dano. And it's set in 1960 in Montana, and we meet Jeanette Brinson, played by Kerry Mulligan, and her husband Jerry, played by Jake Gyllenhaal. They move to Montana with their son Joe, who's 14, played by Ed Oxenbould. And we see action, as so to speak, from his perspective, through his eyes. Jerry is fired from his job at a country club. He won't take it back because he's so proud, and he gets a low-paying job fighting a huge fire. And that has, I fear, been only too much in the news recently in the States, where with all the tragedies in California. But there's no question here that this is about a journey, her journey, Jeanette's journey, where her husband basically can't keep down a job and isn't sure what he wants to do. She takes a job as a swimming instructor. She's involved with Warren Miller, played by Bill Camp, a rather good performance of someone in middle age, late middle age, who's, well, you don't normally find sympathetic characters in films who smoke cigars, but the facts are that he is a very,
About Nick Fury?
A very rounded, rather interesting character. And from the son's perspective, he sees his mother changing before his eyes, which is precisely what is happening. I mean, she really puts depth and passion into the role. Jake Gyllenhaal is always extremely good. He's given so many first-class performances. And I was very touched by this film. I think it's visually absolutely first class. I think it's also extremely dramatic. When he comes home, she has changed, and this is something that will stay with you. It's a touching film, it's well scripted, and Paul Dano did an absolutely first class job.
Ben.
Yeah, I'd certainly give it a watch. I think it looks really interesting. But quite artisan, actually, by the looks of it. Looks quite, just by the way it's been made and stuff, I think it looks very, it's very unique, bit art house. Very,
yes, it is. It's Sundance, and it is an art house movie. But I wouldn't, you always feel if you put a label of art house movie on a film, whereas it would attract certain people, I fear it will turn certain people off. And I mean, it is a film, a fascinating insight into the human condition, and this is what can so easily happen. And you see a character, in the case of Kerry Mulligan's character Jeanette, metamorphose so fascinatingly, and also, of course, you are waiting to see what happens when her husband returns, and also how this affects their son. Visually, as I say, also very, very strong. And the fire theme and fighting it for practically no money, simply because you're muddled and wondering what to do if you do that. What happens, and what is the future for your family, and indeed your wife?
Well, especially in an era of American history where effectively you've got Kennedy in the White House as opposed to Donald Trump. I mean, who knows what could happen there?
But also where women were so repressed.
Well, that's why we needed the liberation, clearly, Richard. But still, that's another issue for another time. Emma,
it's a good film. It's a very good film.
Would you be accessing Wildlife?
Yeah, I wasn't aware of the film before now, but
that's
actually,
the beauty of the Midwinter Drive Holiday Edition. You see,
sounds really interesting.
Education as well.
Yeah.
Right, that's basically it then, Richard. Emma's going to ask you those last two questions for this week, at least.
Fine. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Absolutely, and if you'd like next week to take a turn around London and those bright lights, I'm still there to be a guide.
Oh, should happen.
Pretty needs to set up a page.
It's all. So he'll be back next week, I presume.
Yes.
He's already said that.
Yes,
yes.
I will be indeed. I hope.
Ian Lennox is up next with more sporting news from Newcastle.
Christmas. Oh, I can't wait to see those faces. Driving home for Christmas, yeah. Well, I'm moving down that line, and it's been so long, but I will be there. I sing this song to pass the time away. Driving in my car, driving home for Christmas. I'll get there, top to toe in tailbacks. Oh, I got red lights all around, but soon there'll be a freeway, yeah. Get my feet on holy ground, so I sing for you. Christmas. Driving home for Christmas with a thousand memories. I take a look at the driver next to me. He's just the same. Just the same. All around,
driver next to me.
Singer, scholar, festival ambassador, and midweek drivette. It's Eva MacDonald on the Midweek Drive.
Good morning, Eva. How
Hello,
are you?
Hello, I'm fine, thank you.
Back on the morning edition of the Midweek Drive for the first time for a long time, really.
I know, it's the first in a while.
Very good. Just in time, of course, to say welcome to that wonderful Suncastle United supporter. It's the combination of Sunderland and the former side of Newcastle. Suncastle United, probably going to be run by Peter Kenyon in a few months' time. Ian Lennox, how are you, Ian?
Feeling a lot better and happier. That it looks like Newcastle are going to...
To a man who basically
was off the shackles of a certain Mr. Ashley.
A man who basically was fired from Chelsea and actually sort of cocked up various dodgy dealings at Manchester United, and you got Peter Kenyon, so that's great. You know, it's like for like, really. So.
I think if you've had an intimate knowledge of what's been going on up here for the last 11 years, even that, you would even welcome even that.
Really. And despite the fact that you got a 1-1 draw yesterday with Everton, which surely was cause for celebration and joy and delight.
Yeah, it was unexpected, really, I suppose.
There we are.
There's
some funny results going on now, isn't there? A lot of the clubs in the division have suddenly started to win.
Like Brighton actually only getting to go to 10 men and actually then scoring 3-1.
And still winning. Yeah, exactly. And the 3-0 up at half-time. I don't think that's a bad thing at all against their rivals.
No one ever really... Lords in the national press is one I see anyway, and Lords Chris Hughton, he's got a remarkable record.
Oh, huge record, and even then, in fact, I think Brighton published it the other day on their Twitter page, some of the figures that he's got, and it's just incredible, I think it kind of is a bit of an oversight in general, really. But he's not one of those people that likes to boast, and that's what I like.
No, well, he hasn't got that sort of TV personality, really, has he?
He's a quiet, sensible, decent man.
And so no one ever mentions him for the big jobs, but I mean, why on earth he doesn't get the chance, I don't know.
Who knows?
I think he was in charge of a Newcastle United, but that's not really a big job.
He did fine. He got promotion, and he fell foul of Mr. Lambias, who was the running the club then.
Well, it's just... And now, you were saying you'd actually met and encountered Chris Rea, who, of course, we were hearing musically from.
Yes.
He was a keen Middlesbrough fan.
So
what was he like in person then?
I liked him a lot. I've just met him briefly. He was coming into this television series to promote a sort of film he'd been doing, I think. I remember, it was 20 years ago, this. And it fell to me to sort of to meet him and greet him. And he's a very down-to-earth lad when I spoke to him. And he was absolutely, there was nothing a big star about him at all. He was a massive, massive star, or still is, I presume. He was a smashing lad to talk to.
Excellent.
I liked him enormously.
Well, that's good to hear. Eva, it's a long time since you spoke to Ian. In fact, Ian likewise didn't come and go and see you at Saltfleet this year. Don't worry, when are you next off to your next adventure?
Hello. Okay, so hello, Ian.
Hello, Pet.
Nice to speak to
hello,
you for
pet.
A while.
Hello, Pet. You can tell
they've bonded on the process. I'll promote you to Hello, Pet, Flower and Honey.
Oh,
it's been a long time. I can't remember what you asked me now, Alex.
No, I can't.
Where are you going next?
Oh, okay. So I'm going down to Devon in about 2 weeks now, I think.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. And I'm working at a holiday park called Ruda with Park Team Resorts.
Is,
it's just
is
another
that a
one red-nosed
parks. Holiday park?
Sorry, what are you doing at the holiday park? It's just...
It's not a red nose holiday park, no, Alex.
Ruda, the red nose holiday park.
No, it's...
He's being silly again, isn't he, Eva?
I know. He's got it in the Christmas spirit.
Turn his microphone off.
I'm on the wrong side of the desk.
Oh, I should say turn off his microphone.
No, it's just entertainment, work, and then being holiday park entertainer,
You like a red coat?
This is what happens. It's kind of like the red coat role at Butlins, but
better.
It's with a different company, so we have different names.
Different coats.
Much more sophisticated.
Yes. Is it?
I do prefer the uniforms at Park Dean Resorts.
Really?
Yeah. No knee-length pleated skirts.
I must admit, I find the knee-length pleated skirt particularly sort of fashionable when I
wear
them myself.
I wouldn't say it would
really.
Suit you, Alex.
Do you not? Yeah, no. So Ben, are you a knee-length?
Well, Ruth Manner used to wear shorts when she was...
Ruth Maddock, of course, wife of Philip Maddock, both of whom are actually in that great heighty high heaven in the sky. It's a small and strange world.
Ruth Maddock was in a show up here a few months ago.
She's still going, which is wonderful.
Still going.
Precisely. That's the important.
It's in the Calendar Girls.
Well, there we are.
As was Denise Walsh from up here.
Well, of course. Now, we've celebrated the joy. We haven't even mentioned the excitement that Newcastle actually going through. And indeed, the fact that many people are saying it's what Ashley does. It'll get part of the way, and then you say it's not a good deal for Newcastle United, and it'll all end in tears. So don't worry, Ian.
Thank you very much.
I just thought, you might still be there. That's the important thing.
You're not coming here for Christmas, are you?
Is that me the invitation, or perhaps it's got lust?
No.
We're going to find out about skin issues with respect to Pauline Clerking, Dr. Pauline Clerking, as GP specialising in dermatology, and Louisa Burton, who is the current Miss Europe World. That's the current Miss Europe World, who overcomes self-esteem issues.
What does that mean?
She's Miss Europe World. I'm just quoting from the information.
But what citizen is Miss Europe World is a Miss Europe?
We'll ask her. On your behalf, Ian, we'll ask her.
Thank you.
Emma,
Thank
would you like to put those last two questions to Ian, please?
Yes. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
I have. It's been short and sweet. But we did get a draw last night, so I'm in a good mood.
Will you be joining us again next week?
I hope so, yeah.
Starting without you. As mentioned, skin issues and challenges with respect to that. Before we actually go to Dr. Pauline Clerking and Louisa Burton, Eva MacDonald is a former Miss Lincolnshire. Was this something which you kind of thought you were thinking about from that point of view? Obviously, you didn't quite reach Miss Europe World, but you worked in that program.
No, I only did the Miss Teen.
Okay. Well, in terms of this particular, we're delighted to welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition now Louisa Burton, Miss Europe World. Good morning, Louisa. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Excellent. Now, you are a British Skin Foundation ambassador, and that's pretty much the hat you're wearing for today. But, I mean, many people were listening to this saying, Louisa Burton, challenges with skin matters and so on and so forth. It's impossible. And yet, you know, you're proof that in many ways you can still work through the challenges of eczema, cirrhosis, and so on. Psoriasis, I should say.
Yes, that's correct. I'm extremely proud of the Miss Europe World Health Organization, actually, for seeing that beauty isn't just on the surface and that there's so much more to beauty. And I'm really excited. I've just climbed a mountain, actually, and raised £10,000 for the British Skin Foundation by taking the Miss Europe World sash to the summit. So that's extremely exciting. We've got a documentary coming out as well about that.
Eva, would you like to quiz Louisa on the work she's doing with Miss Europe World? Again, wearing your hat as a former Miss Lincolnshire.
I know. So what kind of got you involved with this foundation? Like, was there a reason that you wanted to get particularly involved with it, as well as the pageant sort of supporting it? Or was it just because the pageant was supporting it mostly that you wanted to get involved?
I've been doing pageants for a while, and for me it was more about confidence. I did one competition where I was actually completely covered in psoriasis at the time, and I remember I had to go out on stage. It was televised, this was in Albania. I had to go out on stage, and I remember one of the judges came up to me afterwards and said, you had so much confidence because you just didn't let it knock your confidence. You were in a bikini, smiling, just, you know, doing everything, and they were just, that just made me feel like, no, actually, you can just go out there and just be yourself and be appreciated for that. And you don't have to let a skin condition hold you back from doing things that you want to do.
Yeah, so when you had psoriasis, was it like all over the body? Was it in one specific area? Because I know with psoriasis, I think when I actually had it last year, and it was sort of all over.
So you have psoriasis quite bad then. Okay, so we've got another beauty queen who's... I love that.
I know, it's weird, isn't it? Connections.
It's what you call getting the script together. That's the important thing.
Yeah, no, that's great. So, sorry, what was the question again, Dolly?
No, when you had psoriasis, was it... And it was in the competition as well.
Was it all over?
Yeah, was it all over, or was it in a specific area?
Yeah, so it comes and goes. At the moment, it's just on my elbows and my knees, but I have competed. I've been modelling as well for a good 14 years, and I have done shoots, I have done competitions completely covered in psoriasis, and then I've done it at times. It's unpredictable. It completely depends on stress, whether you have a bit, or it's everywhere. The only place that it never goes is my face, but it goes my scalp, my trunk, my legs, arms.
So you sort of embrace it instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just have to wear it with confidence. I call them my logos now.
Let's turn to Dr. Pauline Clerkin, who's obviously a GP specialising in dermatology. I mean, in a sense, what we've just been listening to, Pauline, from Eva and Louisa, etc., it's good news, and it's important to actually work through this so we don't get depressed by skin conditions and so on, presumably.
Absolutely, yeah, it's fantastic to hear because, you know, I do see a lot of people coming into the surgery with skin problems, and a lot of those, you know, wouldn't dream of doing what Louisa is talking about. So it is really good, and I think, you know, that's one of the values of the Straight Up Skincare Project. It's designed to help people, you know, empower themselves to look after their skin, and there'll be lots of tips about how to manage dry skin conditions, particularly on that, if you go to the website for that.
Again, this notion of skin conditions is defined as dry, flaky, sore, sensitive skin, eczema, dermatitis, psoriasis.
Yeah.
Also in the studio, we have Emma Street. Emma, I mean, you've been listening to what we've been talked about. Any thoughts from yourself?
I mean, I found it quite interesting that, you know, only a third of people with severe skin conditions actually go and talk to anybody about it. Do you think there's a level of embarrassment, or, you know, being a bit self-conscious about it, and
yes,
then
definitely.
That's why people aren't seeking
quite
help.
Often I see people and they come in about something else, and then it's really only when they get the confidence of having talked to you for a while they'll say, well, actually I've got this other problem, but, you know, they've either given up or they're hiding it. So I think I like Louisa's idea of calling them her logos. I'm going to use that.
Yeah, I used to cry in the mirror. I felt dirty. I've been called a leper. All sorts of things that made me just feel broken. So, yeah, it definitely does have an effect. You know, people commit suicide because of skin conditions. They have anxiety, they have depression. So it does affect mental health as well. It's not just on the skin.
Hmm. Ben, from a public relations perspective, listening to this sort of discussion, you know, I mean, I do think it's interesting using it as a possible logo, but from your own thought, any thoughts?
No, I certainly think it's a great thing. But Louisa, if I just quickly turn to you, do you find, obviously from your social media output, but generally through these campaigns, do you find that you inspire a lot of people, or do you find you get feedback from people directly who have been affected by psoriasis and other severe skin conditions to help find their confidence and help find their feet in the world, really?
Yes, all the time. I get people across all of my social media platforms. I've had granddads even, I've had children, mum, everyone, teenagers messaging me, asking for advice, asking me what type of things I use. I always say, you know, emollients are particularly good, especially in the winter, if you can use some thicker ones. And for instance, the E45 Straight Up Skincare Hub, they can go on my profile and get a link to that and go and see. There's so much information on there about how you can look after your skin. So, yeah, it's good. I reply to everyone that I can where possible, but I do get a lot of messages, yeah.
Again, I think actually climbing a mountain, Europe's tallest mountain, in aid of the British Skin Foundation, that deserves a round of applause itself. So go ahead, go with that.
Thank you.
Pauline, best place to go to in terms of finding out further details about what we've been talking about today, and in particular, of course, the Straight Up Skincare Project.
Yes, absolutely. It's practical advice because it's been set up by a group of healthcare professionals, and there's a trigger tracker app there as well. Some videos about how to apply your emollients and some information just about how often to use it, what types of ones to use at, you know, certain types of the times of the year, as Louisa has mentioned. And
it's been awesome. Dr. Pauline Clerken and Louisa Burton, the current Miss Europe World, many thanks indeed. Take care and keep on keeping on, people.
Thank
all right
you.
Goodbye, thanks,
bye. Ba-da-da-da.
Looking from a window above, it's like a story of love. Can you hear me? Came back only yesterday, moving further away. Won't you hear me? All I needed was the love you gave. All I needed for another day. And all I ever knew, only you. Sometimes when I think of your name, and it's only a game, and I need you, listening to the words that you say, getting harder to stay. When I see you, all I needed was the love you gave. All I needed for another day. And all I ever knew, only you.
Well, it would seem that 1 in 10 of us will be spending the festive period with people we don't really know. Many of us don't actually know the full names of family friends, that's 45%, cousins, 32%, aunts, and indeed uncles that we'll be spending Christmas with. Do just a quick straw poll in the studio. Eva, will you know the names of the people you'll be spending Christmas with?
I actually learned the names of my team last night.
Right,
on Facebook,
nice.
But I don't know them personally.
Okay.
Yeah.
Emma?
Yeah.
Will you know the people?
I will.
You will actually.
Yes, I will.
And Ben is a case
same
of
every year.
The same every year. Well, whilst again this family festive period takes place, it does seem that we know very little about the people we spend it with, even people such as parents and grandparents. And who better to talk to about this survey than from Ancestry, the awesome Russell James. Good morning, Russell. How are you?
Hi. Good morning. I've never been described as awesome before. But thank you.
Well, it's an awesome thing. I mean, this particular survey, which does suggest, you know, in terms of the human family, the whole notion of the family Christmas festive familial ties. Just talk us through why the survey was done and what sort of things are coming out of it.
Yeah, so we did this research to sort of try and get a picture of the family Christmas. What is the reality of it? And the fact it paints this really clear picture. First thing is, people don't know about their family, and like you say, you know, and obviously people know their, you know, who their parents are. But the fact, a lot, you know, so many people have this cousin on the other side of the table who they kind of know they're their cousin, but they don't
and
really
you are?
Know how they're. Exactly. You're kind of, oh, I know your first name, but then when you actually go, who are they? How are you connected? People don't know. And then alongside that, people are sat there saying they've got nothing to talk about, which is just so British, isn't it? We're all sat there and, you know, you have the dinner and then you watch the TV repeat. Mm. And we're all sat there with the paper hats on, looking at each other, not knowing what to talk about. And so that's why we've launched this sort of campaign. We're on a real mission to get people talking about their family, because people do want to know. More than 2/3 of the people who we surveyed do want to know more about their family. It just seems like they don't really know how to get that conversation going.
Eva, how would you start the conversation going? Would it just a case of you just say, who are you? I don't know. Or would you just use social media and communicate via that stuff?
Well, that can always be an icebreaker. Who are you? Tell me about yourself. Mm-hmm. You can go down the traditional route. Mm-hmm. I do get what you mean, though, because there are, like, especially in my situation, actually, there are ways where you don't actually know who you're spending. It depends what you're doing on Christmas Day.
Does anybody know who this person is? Just randomly turned up.
Well, unless you're spending Christmas Day with family.
Exactly.
I mean, my situation, yeah. It's I'm working on Christmas
exactly.
Day. So
you don't know who could be actually down in that holiday camp. You know, yeah. Lord above.
So it's just, I do get the conversation half and half. Yeah. If you're working on Christmas Day and you're like with different people, then you basically don't know who you're spending it with. And yeah, I would go down the traditional route of literally being like, who are you?
Okay.
Tell me about yourself.
Ben, you've had a chance to have a little perusal through this.
Yeah.
I mean, personally, I don't have any issues at home. I don't know many people myself that have Christmas with people that I don't know. I'd say the biggest situation for me in those circumstances probably will be weddings, where... I turn up to a wedding and actually I'm kind of looking at people going, am I related to you or not?
It can be really embarrassing at a wedding, of course.
It is awkward. It is very awkward. But so you kind of have to wait to be introduced if someone knows both sides.
Is this a thing, Russell, that we could actually roll this out for weddings and other social events, not just Christmas?
Yeah, and like you say, it can be very awkward with people who you feel like you should know about, but you don't. And that's why, so we've launched this campaign with the Lambs, Larry and George Lamb. I would encourage people to get onto it's ancestry.co.uk/family Christmas, where there's actually tips on how to get these conversations going. Because, as you can imagine, you know, people who've seen Larry Lamb on TV, he has no issue getting conversations going. So he's got some great suggestions of how to get talking to these relatives, you know, without just going, who the heck are you?
Emma, does this gel with yourself? Would you like to find out more about the streets around the globe and so on?
It's not so much from my dad's side, it's more my mum's side. The family is pretty big, and I think I've only just got to grips with which cousin is from which uncle and which... But luckily we don't spend Christmas together, I only see them at family gatherings, so I can avoid
it could be rude for that. this survey, almost 2/3 of those surveyed wanted to know more about their family, so really ancestry is the way to go with respect to that, and presumably surprising results as well, both good and more challenging.
Yeah, so what I'd encourage people to do is, if you get on Ancestry, start building your tree. You start with yourself, so, you know, most people at least know something about where they're from, and then I would say, like we say, get talking to people. Get talking to your mum and dad, you know, where they were born, their birth dates. If you can, grandparents, start getting hold of birth certificates from the recent family. You can actually fill out a fair amount of your recent relatives. And then what you get online is you start getting these automatic suggestions of how to take your tree further from there. It starts pointing you into records. So you can start discovering these incredible stories from your past, you know, be it people who fought in World War One, or people who were on the Titanic, or, you know, Victorian ancestors going right back from there. And like you say, it is, everybody has surprises in their past. Everybody has a lot of, you know, as this is showing, everybody has a lot of information that they just don't know. And the starting point, like we say, is just get talking about it. Just, you know, use Christmas when you're with family to have these conversations.
And don't do it on social media. It could be a win-win situation in all sorts of ways. Or maybe you could use social media. What the heck? Ancestry.co.uk, the best website to go to, obviously. Russell James, it's been fantastic connecting with your good self today. Will you return in 2019 and keep us appraised of more Ancestry goodies?
Of course I will, absolutely.
Sledge, we are family on Siren Radio. We're coming up to the news in a few seconds from now. And after the news, yes, a gentleman who lived at a Tibetan monastery, in fact, for 6 months, with monks who spoke no English, communicating through body language. And he's also written an absolutely amazingly wonderful FM. Book about communications.
Mobile. This is Siren Radio. Lincoln. Siren Radio.
And the weather today, highs of 13 degrees centigrade, lows of 12 degrees centigrade, a bit of light cloud and a moderate breeze. Now, as mentioned, communication, we're using it on radio at this present time. We've got a whole range of things. We're all faced with presentations as well. I mean, Ben, within public relations, you do an awful lot of presentational work, really. Pitching, all that kind of matter that comes through. Likewise, Eva, not even from that point of view. And Emma, all this to look forward to and more with respect to presentations. So to address some of the key things, why not speak to award-winning expert in communications and founder of corporate communications consultancy Body Talk, the wonderful Richard Newman. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
Good morning, Alex. I'm really good. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to connect with your good self. Initially, when we saw some of your curriculum vitae about living in a Tibetan monastery for 6 months with monks who spoke no English, we thought, this is going to be interesting. Initially, I thought they didn't speak at all, but they did actually communicate, but through body language and tone
That's
of
right.
voice.
Yeah, so when I got to this monastery, this is going back 23 years ago now, I thought I was there to improve their English. And so I went up to the foothills of the Himalayas, knocked on the front door of this monastery, and the head monk there called Paljor, he came up to greet me and greeted me in Tibetan. And I thought, hang on a second, I thought I was here to improve your English, but you don't speak any English at all. And it turned out they spoke Tibetan, Nepali and Hindi really well. And I spoke a bit of French and German from school, which wasn't especially helpful. And so we had to figure out, well, how do we communicate then if we don't have words to do it? And pretty soon we realized that through our body language and through our tone of voice, we could connect, we could understand each other. And by the end of 6 months of living with them, I got to the point where they were all able to understand and speak a good conversation in English. And I learned how to speak Nepali, which is the main language of the town. And I was more effective at speaking it than I was with French or German that I'd studied for about 6 years at school. So it really showed me how, you know, you can use the power of body language to connect with people beyond the surface level of words.
Quite literally, you were born to speak. So what's holding you back? The official book that's obviously been released from that point of view as well. Now, this is, again, published research that you did back in 2016. Small changes in the behaviour can increase how confident, how knowledgeable, how convincing you are. Not by 1%, not by 10%, not by 42%. 42%.
Yeah, we were blown away by the research, actually. We worked with UCL because they're world-renowned for their research on psychology, influence, nonverbal behaviour. And when we went to them with this idea for a study, they said, look, you'll probably prove nothing. It's probably not going to show anything. But if we get 5% difference in what we see from one part of the study to another, that would be great. And essentially what we were looking at is we were aiming to compare the most common habits that people have day-to-day when they communicate in an interview, a presentation, in an important meeting, and then we compared that with what we felt would be the most effective styles of communication. And so you'd have somebody speaking where they would say the same words and wear the same clothes, but by slightly changing their behavior, there was an increase in 42% more people who said they were convinced by their ideas, 44% more people who said they were good leaders. And the one that really blew my mind was 59% more people said they would vote for someone in an election based on going from the most common habits we see people using day to day to the most effective communication styles. And the key thing behind all of it is that all we did really was it was about stripping away bad habits that people use day to day and coming back to the way that you were born to speak, standing the way you're born to stand, moving your arms the way that you're born to move them, and speaking the way that is most engaging for people to listen to.
I was particularly interested in terms of the noted bad habits that you'd addressed when it comes to speaking. PowerPoint, of course, coming out there with the lovely line, we are built to tell stories, passing them on from one generation to another, which we've done for 100,000 years, up until PowerPoint was invented 30 years ago.
That's right. So I think PowerPoint has been destroying our ability to communicate ever since. I mean, you know, people who created the software weren't doing that intentionally. They were just trying to help people out. But the way that we've been using it, creating these bullet-pointed lists, putting 400 words per slide during
please.
The course of a meeting.
Yeah. I've just been assessing students who've actually been too much information, info dump, reading from the slide. No, no, and no again. Ben, would you like to take this up, please? Ben Lewis, PR student extraordinaire.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, you know, I spent a year out just recently.
Exactly.
And I must say it's somewhere I've seen it in many places I've worked in. I think a lot of people are guilty of it, doing the PowerPoint slides. And it does. You can
like
tell the general theme of the office and the meeting that you're in. People, you can tell, are dying by that PowerPoint. It's really
quite literally hanging themselves up and saying, "Please let it stop."
It's really,
now.
As you've said in here, you know, it takes away traditional communication, and people aren't. I wouldn't say people are normally used to it. It's more the fact that there's less engagement involved because you're staring at visual slides rather than listening to someone. And
exactly.
I don't think it's great. I really feel it like takes away from the natural communication engagement process that you'd normally have between two individuals or more.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Ben. I mean, that's the challenge, is that if we go back so many years, about 100,000, when we started telling stories to each other around a campfire, passing on our wisdom, it was literally life and death, where we could be eaten by a saber-toothed tiger if we didn't pass on our wisdom effectively to the rest of our tribe. And so we did it through the power of storytelling. And then we got to the point of cave paintings and doing the original version of visual aids. And we're so far removed from that now you know, people wonder why they go to meetings. They spend hours preparing PowerPoint and documents, and then they wonder why people aren't really engaging. And the reason being, we've got to get back to the way that people were born to listen and the way that you were born to speak, which is through the power of story.
Emma, Earlier this week, I was using PowerPoint to deliver a whole package on to yourself about ambush marketing, amongst other things. From your own perspective and listening to the words of Richard Newman there, and as a communications and public relations student, what are your thoughts?
I don't mind PowerPoints too much, mm-hmm. but I think it does depend on...
They're going to help against a saber-toothed tiger, even if you threw it at it. Yeah, a saber-toothed tiger, it's not going to cope.
Yeah, I find it quite interesting about your mental state when you go in to do a presentation, how that's quite important, because I find that I get very anxious before I go and do a presentation, but I find that helps me. I don't know. I find that the nervous energy kind of makes me do it better.
Emma, I think you're right to say that. I think nervous energy can be really useful, and actors have a saying where they say, we do nerves, we don't do fear, because a little bit of nervous energy actually gets you to the point where you are ready. Fear says, I'm not ready, don't let me do this, but nerves say to your body, get ready. And so that can be a good thing. The place where I have to work with people carefully is where they have anxiety or stress that is not allowing them to perform at their best before an event. And I often say to people, you know, you can flip this over. If you have anxiety about an important meeting, interview, presentation that's coming up, essentially all you're doing is picturing a negative version of the future. You're feeling anxious because you think it's going to go badly, whereas you flip it to the place that you're talking about there, Emma, which is that nervous energy, is if you just picture a positive version of the future, imagine 30 minutes after the pitch, presentation or interview is finished and everything's gone well, then actually you just get that point of thinking, I'm really looking forward to this. So again, it's getting back to how you're born to think about things, the way that you're born to get into a peak state, which is another one of the elements that we talked about in this new book, You Were Born to Speak.
Much as Mike Dooley was talking about yesterday from Mexico. Eva, as a performer, does this resonate with your own experiences in the profession and entertaining folk when you think, I mean, obviously you're not going to bring a PowerPoint slide on stage when you're performing,
not a PowerPoint.
But exactly.
But no, I do get what Ben was saying about the adrenaline rush. Like, adrenaline does really help with pushing you on to do things. It's not, if it's the difference between being nervous and being like ready to do something with adrenaline.
Don't be paralysed by the fear. Use the energy.
That's the word. So fear and nerves is a different thing. And
I mean, the very fact that we're speaking to the awesome Richard Newman is enough to actually drive us into a paroxysm of kind of panic.
But adrenaline, it does really push you on to be out there and be more confident. But yeah, fear, on the other hand, is a different thing. It's like a completely
false
different
expectations
debate,
appearing real. False expectations appearing real.
Yeah, and if we have a bit too much adrenaline in our body too, that can cause a bit of a quivering feeling in the voice. And so sometimes we say to people, get the adrenaline in there, that's okay. And then we go through breathing techniques that allow people to control the amount of adrenaline they're having. So it's just enough to get them going and not enough to paralyze them. As well as you've also got to control cortisol that's in your body, which is the stress hormone. And so in this book, You Were Born to Speak, we talk about how you can be in charge of those elements in your body rather than them being in charge of you.
Richard, would you find people now increasingly using technology devices, have their heads down on their phones, their laptops, anything like that? Now, do you think that takes away the natural communication? So when they're in situations where they've got to present or speak to large groups of people, do you feel like that's why they tend to get more nervous, because they haven't necessarily had the practice, or they're used to being, you know, stuck to their devices and communicating in on a non-verbal sense rather than through verbal communication?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think that every parent knows these days, where if you look at kids where when they used to have sleepovers, they'd be giggling into the night and you'd have to tell them to keep it down. But these days, if you go and see what your kids are up to, they're actually all on their screens, possibly texting each other, but not actually looking at each other. And then, you know, adults can smugly sort of say that, but actually we're doing the same thing. If you go into any office, you'll find that there are people sitting next to each other who send an email to each other in order to communicate ideas. And then they do have great nerves when they stand up in front of people to speak. If you contrast that to one of the charities that is being supported by this book, there's all of the profits from the book You Were Born to Speak are going to three amazing charities. And I went to visit one of them in Ghana just 2 weeks ago, so in northern Ghana. And there they don't have the access to screens. In fact, they have to do an IT exam to get into high school, but they've never seen a computer or used one for many of them. And I went to see a debate that was being done on child's rights between different kids at this school. And it was extraordinary, their ability to stand up with no fear and to speak to 100 of their peers was on a level of confidence and engagement that I rarely see day to day in different corporations that I teach, because that's their way of communicating with each other. They're not doing it through screens, they're doing it face to face. And so that's why there's so much work that's being done by us and by others these days to get people back to the place of remembering how you're born to communicate so you can connect and fulfill your true potential.
BornToSpeak.com, a fantastic web address, which I noticed actually Richard has got details of a book launch next week at the Dominion Theatre in London.
That's right. Yeah, we're in the spirit of giving, coming up towards Christmas. Not only am I giving all the profits from the from the book away to charity, we're also giving a free event, a free masterclass to people. If you want to come along, if you go to BornToSpeak.com, you can get details there about the book launch, and you get champagne on arrival at this book launch on Tuesday next week. It's at the Dominion Theatre. There's a two-hour masterclass led by me to bring the book to life for you, and drinks in the bar afterwards.
Amazing.
So all you have to do, go to BornToSpeak.com, get your ticket.
Exactly. Last time I was at the Dominion Theatre London, I was watching Bucks Fizz. I know, strange world, but there we are.
Did you drink Bucks Fizz?
No.
Oh, right. Okay, that didn't work.
A different line entirely. Richard, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with you, good self, today. Again, a reminder that the book to get in time for Christmas is You Were Born to Speak. So what's holding you back? You know, that's the key thing. By, of course, Richard Newman. Richard, have you had a reasonably satisfactory conversation with us this morning on the programme?
It's been fabulous. Thank you all so much.
So the next critical question is, will you kindly return in 2019 and keep us updated of good communication practice and so on and so forth? Will you be back?
Absolutely, anytime.
A round of applause for Richard Newman, please.
A lot to you and me. great scale, we're just another winter's tale. It was only a winter's tale, just another winter's tale. And why should the world take notice of one more love that's failed? It's a just another winter's day.
As we proceed through the 21st century, it would seem that with social media and all the other diverse technological aspects that are actually out there, we're always connected, or are we? Over half of people in the East Midlands have admitted to feeling always, often, or sometimes lonely. And of those people, half of them actually worry that something will happen to them and no one will notice. So to address the extent of loneliness and social isolation, not just in the East Midlands, but in the United Kingdom, we're delighted to welcome Senior Policy and Advocacy Manager at the British Red Cross. That would be Eleanor Heavey. How are you, Eleanor?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a very important topic, this, because we like to feel that nobody should ever be alone unless they want to be over the festive period in particular, but any period of time, really. And this is quite a staggering result. As I said, social media tends to suggest that we're all one big family. Well, actually, that's not really the case, is it?
No, and our research has really showed that loneliness and social isolation doesn't discriminate, and it's a widespread issue that's felt across all age groups and backgrounds in the UK. As you mentioned, over 52% of adults in the UK are always, often, or sometimes lonely, and half of those who are lonely worry that no one would notice if something happened to them. So it's a very serious issue.
6 in 10 of those surveys said that loneliness is having a negative impact on their quality of life, and 61% worry their loneliness will get worse. Now, this is something I think everybody can be faced with, because partners can pass on, divorces can happen, you can feel yourself cut off from society. There are all sorts of reasons in terms of why people end up feeling alone. What are the best strategies to actually adopt, Eleanor, in terms of actually coping with this?
I think it's making sure that we're really looking out for each other and helping people to connect. It can be our friends, our family or colleagues. It's often someone close to us. And it's an issue that can affect many of us at any time in your life. Exactly as you've said, different significant life changes can really have an impact on us and sometimes make us feel lonely. So I think it's checking that we're reaching out for help as well, or that we're proactively getting involved in our community through volunteering or taking up new hobbies, or if you're really concerned about someone or you're struggling to connect as well, you can go to redcross.org.uk/connect to find out where we run our dedicated community connector services that can help support people as well.
We often hear about the phrase that sometimes people slip through the cracks of our social society and so on. Again, some people might choose to, but in terms of the overall system, presumably it's important to note that this is just a case of, look, it's a way of ensuring that you're never alone, and people should never really feel that there's no one they can turn to.
Absolutely, and I think it's really important to address when we do feel sometimes lonely as well, because chronic or long-term loneliness can have really devastating and long-term health effects on people. So it's really something that we want to address as soon as possible. And like I said, there are many complex reasons behind why people feel lonely, sometimes a health or mobility issue, or finding it difficult to meet new people or moving to new areas. So I think particularly looking out for each other at these different transitions and helping people to really connect or reconnect with their communities.
And presumably it's not as though it's particularly geared up to a particular age bracket here. It's not a case of, oh, well, if you get over 70 or 80, then clearly you're going to have more feelings of loneliness, etc. This is something that can really impact people right the way through. I mean, I see students even in the university sector who still sort of suffer from feelings of loneliness and so on.
Absolutely, and our research actually showed that it's often younger people and those from more urban areas who are more likely to feel alone. And this could be that young people are more comfortable reporting their loneliness online, but they're also less likely to seek help in their community and more worried about being judged for being lonely as well, when actually it's something that can affect any of us at any time, and it's really not something that people should feel judged or embarrassed about at all.
And in terms of strategies for coping with loneliness, what would you suggest would be the best way forward?
I think proactively trying to connect with different activities and to get involved is really, really key. There are many ways that we can meet new people or reconnect within our own community. So joining a club or actively volunteering, including volunteering with the Red Cross, these are real ways that we can meet people. And also reaching out for help, connecting with a GP as well, if this is something that you're really concerned about. Although many of us may feel lonely, we're actually not alone. So it's really important that we reach out.
Eleanor, it's been fascinating sharing some thoughts with you today. I was also interested in the finding that over 2/3 of folks surveyed often felt completely alone when they were surrounded by people, which again I think is interesting because it ultimately means you need somebody that you can actually share and open up to, really, and perhaps that's something else to bear in mind.
Yes, and I think it's really trying to make those real human connections and just really reaching out.
Well, hopefully we managed to reach out at least briefly today from that perspective. And finally, Eleanor, is there a web address or website that you'd recommend as people should check out to find out more details about, obviously, British Red Cross or indeed the hashtag Power of Kindness?
Yes, and go to redcross.org.uk/connect and you can find out more about our services helping to connect people with their communities.
Eleanor Heavey, Senior Policy and Advocacy Manager at the British Red Cross. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you.
Husband don't know what he's done. Kids don't know what's wrong with mum. She can't say, they can't see. Putting it down to another bad day. Daddy don't know what he's done. Kids don't know what's wrong with mum. So this is how it feels to be lonely. This is how it feels to be small. Left a note for a local girl, and yet he had it all on a plate. So this is how it feels to be lonely. This is how it feels to be small. This is how it feels when your word means nothing at all.
Okay, well, that's how it feels.
Pixie McKenna's with us, Dr. Pixie McKenna, talking about how British folk apparently losing almost a full day of sleep over the festive season. I don't know. It's all to do with the wrapping of presents, I believe. Never mind. Still to come, we've also got that. And we've also got, from the Grinch department, a list of things that are the top Christmas annoyances. Yes, new research has looked into people's top annoyances over Christmas. Apparently having to buy presents for people that are only ever seen on Christmas Day is top of the list for 3 in 10 Brits as the most irritating routine, followed by sending Christmas cards with the gesture not being reciprocated. Also, Secret Santa, very irritating, apparently, according to this survey. And we're going to be talking to Rowan Whittington, Head of Product Development at Vago UK, about the things that people get irritated about at Christmas, really. It's certainly worthwhile considering. Meanwhile, as promised, Pixie McKenna is coming up. William Sitwell is exhausted. Never mind, William. Get well. Be well. Hopefully you'll be back with us next week. Here's Andrew.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, with the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of all, with those holiday greetings and gay happy meetings when friends come to call. It's the happiest season of all. Parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, and caroling out in the snow. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
So what does it matter if you're going to lose 21 hours, 20 minutes of sleep in December if it's the most wonderful time of the year? Or is that all part of the pressure that we're put under in terms of putting up decorations, preparing Christmas dinner, shopping, excited children? Dr. Pixie McKenna, help us. How can we cope with this? We're going crazy.
I know. Isn't it a brilliant piece of research? It was commissioned by Dreams, the bed retailer. And literally, we are losing about a day of sleep in December.
Well, I mean, you know, in the studio, we have three young adults in all manner of wonderful ways. We have entertainer extraordinaire Eva McDonald.
Hello. Nice to speak to you.
Who obviously is going to be performing over Christmas in the southwest of the country.
I know, so I'll probably be losing my sleep there.
Yes, exactly.
Which is not good. We've got I'm very good to speak to.
Ben Lewis, who actually, the theory in the Lewis household, I believe, Ben, is you do all your Christmas preparations the night before.
Well, only for Christmas dinner. Everything else is done in the run-up.
It's all
accordingly.
Planning in Brighton. And we've got Emma Street here. Emma, were you shocked at the findings? 21 hours?
Yeah, I was very shocked.
Ben, social media is once again, Pixie, it would seem, at the heart of activities set to be being shunned. A third plan to reduce time spent on Facebook, Instagram and Snapchat.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy about that because it means that you're more likely to get a better night's sleep. We always advise people to have what's called electronic shutdown. Nobody listens to us, but we do say.
Oh, Pixie, we listen to you. That's why we keep getting you back on the programme. Of course we do.
But, you know, to shut off your devices, because your environment, your sleep environment is very, very important if you want to get a decent night's sleep. So, yeah, turning off your phones and things like that is very important, about an hour to 90 minutes before you go to bed.
I mean, in the East Midlands, 1 in 10 people expect to sleepwalk through Christmas Day. That's not going to be good for future memories. Or will they just rely on everything being recorded on social media and actually sent out on YouTube?
I think the other thing is that, you know, it makes people feel a little bit more irritable. So up there in the East Midlands, they're saying, well, actually, because of the lack of sleep, 1 in 5 are going to be a bit grumpy. Mm. And that's not good on Christmas Day, is
exactly.
it?
Exactly. It's, you know, I mean, we're doing a feature with the Grinch in a few moments' time, so we can't overtake that. Ben, were you shocked by the findings?
Yeah, I certainly was indeed. I don't know. I mean, obviously everyone's different, so you kind of have to relate your own experience to what's in the data. But I find it quite phenomenal, really, that some people spent up to 2 hours losing sleep with decorations, putting up decorations.
Yeah, there was that notion, Pixie. Did we have a nation of people at Dreams actually found that they wake up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night because they got the wrong kind of tinsel?
Well, you know, you'd be surprised. People take Christmas very, very seriously.
Yeah,
I mean, the decorations and the wrapping presents, I found that quite... They're obviously people who wrap presents very well.
Well, with that, because maybe it's a male thing, I don't know, but I find it very difficult to wrap a present.
Horrendous,
it's,
is it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like you just hope for the best and end up sort of probably using a tube of wrapping paper on each particular one.
Although part of me wonders, is this all this study, is it kind of related to, what do you call it, is it self-gratification or making sure what you're doing is correct as that follows the norm of what everyone else is doing? Is there the pressure, the social pressures there?
Pixie, is it a case of social pressure?
Goodness me, yeah. I, it probably is. I mean, like it or not, whether you are a Grinch or whether you are really, you know, into Christmas, you get sucked in. You know,
what about the McKenna household? I mean, I always sort of think that really, if you're looking for absolute perfection, you know, we ask the question, what are things like in the McKenna household? How do they sort this challenge through?
Chaotic. Lack of sleep, definitely. Yeah. Probably a bit of irritability.
Pixie, I can never imagine you being irritated at all.
Oh, not me, obviously. Yeah. And actually, you know, one thing that we're probably bad at in our house is having a good sleep environment. You know, arguments over temperature in the room, probably not doing what we should have done with replacing your mattress every more frequently, having a nice sleep environment. So all of that is very, very important as well. And over and above the Christmas stress and the overindulgence, you really need a good sleep environment.
Mm. Eva, thoughts or questions?
Well, I do get why people would lack sleep, because obviously it's the party season and things like that.
Don't get started on parties. I know.
One thing that I wanted to discuss was if families have kids, like, would you say they'd lose more sleep than families without the kids, or would you say it's about the same?
Yeah, they definitely lose more sleep. I think that the Dreams research said an hour and 52 minutes less. So they're sleeping an hour and 52 minutes less because of the kids. Because kids are super excited about Christmas.
Yeah.
And my daughter's just started to learn how to tell the time, which is a real disaster, yeah.
Also because, like, with kids, especially with them believing it with Santa Claus...
Santa is real. I mean, I don't know what you were saying on that one.
Even though the parents say to go to bed early, kids, they never really do. I mean, I never did when I was little. So,
because you all want to see Santa and trap Santa. I mean, I'm an adult.
It's the Santa phenomenon that keeps people awake.
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, kids are out of routine. Routine is really, really important where sleep is concerned. Kids, just like adults, are out of routine. So while you're having, you know, the extra eggnog and the more Christmas pudding and brandy butter and whatnot, the kids are tucking into stuff that probably they don't have. They're not in a regular routine, sleep routine. They're not in the daily routine, getting up at the same time, going to bed at the same time. And so they also suffer. So there's a whole lot of sleep deprivation and irritability going down as we wade through Christmas.
And that is the reason, Pixie, why not only are you the resident sleep expert for bed retailer Dreams, but you're also the UK's leading female media medic. Awesome. That's the whole routine. Awesome for that.
Thank you very much.
Where can people go, Pixie, to find out further details about what we've been talking about this morning?
You can go to the Dreams website, which is dreams.co.uk, and you'll get some tips on there. At least that might help you. Maybe reduce the lack of sleep that you're going to get over the next few weeks.
Oh, other than that, we've got some Frank Sinatra Christmas Dreaming coming up next, which would be a nice little line forward for the
whole
aspect. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning, Pixie McKenna?
Lovely. Thank you very much. Always great to talk to you.
And will we connect with you again in 2019?
Of course.
Or perhaps in another 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect, obviously, it'll be Christmas Eve, we'll have Santa online, all sorts of that. Pixie McKenna, take care. Many thanks.
Thank you.
I'm doing my Christmas dreaming a little early this year.
of snow around, and yet I go around hearing jingle bells ringing in my ear. Your promise must be the reason the happy season is here. So I'm doing my Christmas dreaming a little early this year. Be the reason the happy season is here.
Quite right too. Frank Sinatra, a younger Frank Sinatra there with Christmas Dreaming, being the link connection between obviously the concern about Christmas sleep and indeed Christmas annoyances. New research looking into people's top annoyances over Christmas. Yeah, well, as mentioned, one in five actually voted for Secret Santa as their top annoyance. Paying for taxis, other things to the fore there. Well, let's talk about this in a little bit more detail with the head of product development at Vego UK. That would be the wonderful Rowan Whittington. How are you, Rowan?
I'm all right, thank you. Alex, how are you this morning?
I'm very good indeed. Just speaking with your good self makes Christmas just a little bit more happier, Rowan. That's the important thing. It's good, positive. And yet it would seem that this research conducted by Vego suggests that, you know, in terms of Britain's top Christmas annoyances, buying presents for people that are only ever seen on Christmas Day itself, it's number one. It's not good, is it?
It's not. And unfortunately, Alex, that means I'm not going to get you a gift this year. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, she didn't even wait till the final question. She goes straight in there. You know, unbelievable. Oh, well. OK, carry on.
Yeah, exactly.
Rowan, you've, I mean, after a bombshell like that, honestly, you know, you can tell. There was other, anyway, moving on, Rowan. Why from that point of view, would you say this research is revealing that actually, you know, maybe we are somewhat Grinch-like when it comes to Christmas gifts and so on?
We are definitely all Grinches at heart. I think it was very, very interesting to see from our research that that people are really grumbly about the strangest of things. So when we were researching it, we found that. That most people are annoyed, as you said, by buying gifts for people that they don't know. I mean, I don't want to buy a gift for my neighbour's dog, but I have to every single year. We also get really frustrated by having to buy Secret Santa gifts, as you said, returning Christmas cards, and also picking up family. Personally, I would add rain and cold and horrible weather to that list, but you know, it's interesting to see what people find annoying.
Let's do a quick straw poll in the studio. Emma Street, yes. Any irritations for yourself that you'd like to share with Rowan and the team?
I do agree with the Christmas card one. I feel embarrassed when I give somebody a Christmas card and then I don't get one back. I make my own as well, so a lot of effort goes into my Christmas cards. So.
That's the gift of giving. That's a positive thing. Eva?
I would definitely say the cold weather. That's number one on my list, but, you know, that's inevitable with the UK if you're going to live here. The Christmas card, I would agree with that. You know, if you give someone a Christmas card and you don't exactly know them, or it's just what you do, really, isn't it? I find that a bit annoying, especially if you don't get one back. That's terrible. And sometimes Secret Santa, it depends who for, though. Sometimes Secret Santa.
And from a practical point of view, Rowan, driving for others, the designated driver, is that something else which kind of secretly you're just storing up potential sociological, pathological tendencies for the future?
Yes, I think we all are. There are 38% of people expect to have to pick up their family members from airports or from train stations, and 1 in 10, so that's 13% of the whole British population, hate having to be the designated driver. It's Christmas time. They want to be out there being festive and enjoying the late nights in the pub rather than having to sit and watch everybody else have fun and drive home when they're tired and not drunk. So, what we've found with Veygo is that people really like our product to use it for that sort of thing, because you can buy from an hour to 30 days. So you can provide the car, but you can get somebody else to be the designated driver for the evening as their gift to you.
Ben, you have experience within the automotive industries. Thoughts from yourself or questions indeed for Rowan?
No. So I think it's quite interesting, really. I know Coke did a campaign. I think it was Coke, or I think it was the government who ran the campaign. It was a kind of a safe drive campaign where the designated driver would, if you go into the pub and show the keys, that the designated driver would get a Coke, over a free Coke from the pub, and then obviously everyone else had to pay for their alcoholic beverages. And I think that was an initiative that went down really well, especially for Christmas when the drink driving campaign comes out. But yeah, I think overall it's quite interesting actually to see the irritations people have and what people don't particularly enjoy over Christmas. I think one for me is probably people who aren't very grateful. People who are quite ungrateful for what you've given them, whether that be through thought or through the product you've given them. I always like it if someone is thankful for something.
It's the attitude of gratitude, and that's why we've been very grateful for yourself, Rowan, joining us today. See the positivity from that point of view. It's great stuff. Where can people go to further information to find out more about Veygo.uk, well, Veygo UK, and indeed the survey we've been talking about?
So you can find us on Veygo.com, which is Veygo, and come and buy some insurance from us instead of paying for expensive taxis.
Whoa, there we are. Fantastic stuff. Don't be vague, go to Veygo. I'll work on that, I think, just Veygo.com. It's been awesome sharing some thoughts with yourself, Rowan. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us from your point of view?
It's been wonderful. Thank you for having me, Alex,
Marvellous.
And everyone there in the studio.
A round of applause for Rowan Whittigan, head of product development at Veygo UK. And happy holidays, Rowan.
Thank you. Have a lovely Christmas.
And that's where we effectively say happy trails for the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. There is an on-location report coming up probably around about 7 o'clock this evening, all about the food and gift fair that we were at, plus, of course, news about the pantomime, which is fantastic. Thanks to Eva McDonald, Ben Lewis and Emma Street in the studio. Thanks to Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Dr. Pauline Clerkin, Louisa Burton, Russell James, Richard Newman, Eleanor Heavey, Dr. Pixie McKenna and Rowan Whitkington. And thank you, dear listener, for being with us for however long. We've always got a podcast to listen again to. Eva, Ben and Emma, thank you. See the gratitude all coming out from that sort of point of view. All very positive. Yes. See you all again next week.
Yes.
That's it. Okay. Would you like to say happy December?
Happy December.
Happy December.